Good morning, everyone. I'm very glad to be here in this beautiful school. And I heard from the rabbis wonderful things about you. But as you know, that the Torah teaching us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the master of universe, the creator of the world, when he took the souls and put it inside the body, and put the soul in this world, there is one major reason that he did it. What is it? That a person would pass the test that Hashem put in this world for him, that when he leaves the world, he will send him to a place to pay him for what he did right. And God forbid, if he did wrong, then he pays the price for what he did wrong. The fact that we all here, that means we still have to correct. That means we are not perfect yet. Those who became perfect don't have to come back to the world. That's what we call reincarnation. And I have a lecture. We brought you some CDs for free after the lecture. You can take them. One of them, it's called Life After Death. This one, DVD. Life After Death. Very, very famous all over the world now. And this is proving that we were in different bodies and the soul comes to the world in different body, and another chance, and another chance, and another chance. The fact that we're here, that's a sign that we did not complete the job in previous life. So even though you're very nice, and you're in a nice community, for sure you have a lot of things to correct. Otherwise, Hashem wouldn't put you here. We would already be in heaven, include myself and all the other people in the world, Jews and non-Jews. Because the non-Jews also have a test. It's a different test than the Jews. It's smaller, but they also have heaven. If they keep all the mitzvot that God gave the goyim, they go to heaven of the goyim. And if the Jews keep the mitzvot, they go to where the Jews go. And if they don't, both of them lose. The non-Jews and the Jews, they lose. Why? Because they did not follow the instruction. Just like in school. You have a month to prepare for a test. You prepare well, you pass the test. It helps you later in your life. You play games, you don't pass the test, you pay the price in 5 years later, right? Everything in life has a price. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. Whatever happens to us is 100% our fault, for good and for bad. Now, when I gave this introduction, I want to explain a little bit more about what are we doing here. What is really the purpose here? They asked the Gaon Mivilna, one of the greatest rabbis in history, 250 years ago, what is the purpose of life? So he answered in one sentence, Tikkun amidot ze kol ha'adam. Correcting your personality, your bad traits, this is what human being is all about. If God put you here, that means you're still proud, you're still angry, you still don't have patience for people, you're still not generous, you still don't have enough emunah and faith, you're still lying, you're still looking at things that you're not allowed to look, and many other things that we do in this world, the fact that we are here, it's a sign that we have to improve. Now, some of us has more problems, some of us have less problems to correct. But like I said, everybody has something to correct, otherwise he would not be here. The Gemara, it's a conclusion of the oral Torah. When Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave him the written Torah that we all know, and he gave him the Ten Commandments on the board, very heavy board. And he gave him the Torah Shebe'al Peh, the oral Torah. If somebody asks you, how much from Judaism come from the written Torah, and how much come from the oral Torah, what would be the answer? The answer is, at least 99% of the Jewish religion come from the oral Torah. Almost nothing comes from the written Torah. Why? The written Torah has a list of 613 mitzvot, 613 commandments. But how to keep the commandments, You don't know even one of the mitzvot without the oral Torah. You don't know how to keep Shabbat, because it doesn't say in the book. This Moshe taught the nation verbally. It wasn't written down. You want to respect your parents. How to respect your parents? There are rules. There's rules how to respect them. If you wouldn't have it, you would not know. Just to love them and to listen to what they say, it's one thing. But there's other things to respect them. So you need to know. You want to eat kosher food. How do you know what's kosher? It doesn't say in the written Torah. You have to go and to read all the instructions that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu in Mount Sinai. How to slaughter the animal, how to put the salt, how to do all these things. How to make tefillin. Tefillin, it takes 1 year to make. 1 year. And it's one step after the other. You slaughter the cow, you take the skin, you put the skin in a lime, you make it dry, then you take brush, you take the hair. One step after the other. Until it becomes the black hard box, and we put inside the parashot that we write, there is about 1,000 halachot about tefillin. If one of them we do not correct, the tefillin is not kosher. You have to bury it in the ground, $1,000 went to the garbage. Where does it say it in the written Torah? Nowhere. How do we know? There's 1,000 steps. Where does it come from? From the moon? Where did it come? When Moshe Rabbeinu came with the Torah, he said, you see, the Torah says you have to put a sign on your hand. Which hand? He didn't say which one. Where? He didn't say. What to put? He didn't say. How did they all know what to do? Jews all over the world have the same tefillin. How did they know? Torah Shebe'al Peh. So the Torah Shebe'al Peh, the oral Torah, it says like this. Da'at kanita, ma chasarta. Da'at chasarta, ma kanita. Translation, if you have da'at, soon I'll explain what it means, you have everything. If you don't have da'at, you have nothing. What does it mean, da'at? In the Torah, there are three words that sound alike. One of them is chokhmah, one is bina, and one is da'at. If you ask a secular Israeli from the University of Tel Aviv, that is very educated person, you tell him, Mr. Cohen, please tell me what's the difference between chokhmah, bina, and da'at. Almost all of them will answer mila nirdefet. Mila nirdefet means similar words, same meaning. Same thing, just metaphoric, makes the language more rich. The answer is wrong. There's no such a thing in Lashon Kodesh. The Lashon Kodesh, what we call Hebrew today, this is the only language in the world that was made by God, by the creator of the world. Every other language, English, Spanish, Russian, all other languages, people made. That's why it has a lot of mistakes and a lot of contradictions in the way that you speak. Like in English, there's rules, but there's so many exceptions to the rules that even Americans that are expert in English, they get confused. Why is it? Because people made it. And they made a lot of changes and correction, and the language is not perfect. I don't know about Spanish a lot, but I'm sure it's the same thing in Spanish and in Russian, in all languages. Why? When people do something, it can be very impressive, but it's not perfect. The only perfect way is when the creator of the world does something, then you know it's the most perfect possible way. Sometimes people say, Rabbi, if I could speak to Hashem, I would give him few advices. I will tell him, why didn't you make this like this? Maybe you should change this like this. Maybe you do this, maybe you do that. So I always answer them, you forget one thing. If there was a better way to make the world, if there was a better way to make our life, better even a little bit, of course God would do it better. If he did it the way he did it, that means it's the most perfect way, because by him it's all perfect. He has no limitation. So if this is the way he made it, and it looks not perfect sometimes to us, the problem is by our understanding, not by his creation. We just don't see. I give you an example. Yesterday after my lecture here in Mexico, one of the people came to me after the lecture and he told me a short story, him and his wife. What did he tell me? He told me that his best thing that he liked to do in life is to play tennis. Every day he used to go and play tennis for 2 hours. This is what he liked. After years of playing tennis, and he became very good. So one time, the maid in his house called him. He said, there's flood on a house. There's water all over, leak, pipe, something happened. So he went to check what happened. He fell. There was one little stair like this. He fell and he broke his leg. He broke his leg. Now he broke his leg. He goes to the doctor. The doctor said to him, I'm very sorry. You need a special cast. Maybe 6 months you won't be able to play. So he got very, very depressed. He said, wow, what's my life without playing tennis? How can I live now? So after that, he started to feel that he has a lot of pain in his spine, in the back. His back hurts, he cannot move, he cannot sit, he cannot stand. He goes to one doctor after the other in Mexico. Every week, different doctor. Every doctor says something more stupid than the other. This is the way he described it. And he said like this. And he said, she heard doctor, so she got nervous. So, Seven in a row, good. No, it's six. It's one for each month that he couldn't play tennis. So what happened is, every doctor here in Mexico told him something else. One told him, one of your legs is shorter than the other. One told him, this came out. One told him, this. Nobody knows the problem. Then his daughter lives in New York. He came to New York, and he has a relative in Brooklyn. Talking Syrian guy. So his friend told him, I'm going to send you to a specialist in Manhattan. So he went to that specialist. They made x-ray. The next day, the doctor called him, come quickly to my office. He came to his office. He said to him, listen, there's a serious problem. What do you have? You have gidul, growth, right on your spine. It's growing, growing, growing. And now it's pressing already on the nerve on the spine. And you're very, very lucky that you're not paralyzed. The way I see the x-ray, you should have been laying in bed for the rest of your life, cannot move. Why? It's about to cut your spine. You need a surgery right away. So he said, oh, my daughter gets married in 2 weeks. How am I going to make surgery now with my spine? I won't be able to walk. So he said, okay, listen. Until the wedding, you sit and you don't move. Don't run, don't turn around, don't bend down. You just don't move. Because every day you can be chas v'shalom paralyzed. So he said to him, you are so lucky. If you would do sport and you move a little bit, then you'll be paralyzed for the rest of your life. You're like this close from being paralyzed. Paralyzed means you cannot move. You know, the people lay all their life in bed, lo aleinu. So after that, they did the surgery, they cleaned the place, and Baruch Hashem now is healthy. So now, when it happened to him, the way he told me, why God is doing things like this? What kind of God is this? Why he enjoyed to make me suffer? You know, I like tennis so much. Why he take the pleasure out of my life? Why? Why not to let me enjoy? But actually, breaking his leg saved his life. You understand? So sometimes you pay a little price, but you get a huge reward. Now let me explain what I mean. One time, there is a Rosh Yeshiva from Yerushalayim. He has big yeshiva for American boys. They all go and learn in Yerushalayim. Their parents pay money, and they go to learn yeshiva. Every month he comes to America to collect money. So his wife tells him, why you don't go business class? Why you have to sit back in economy like this? You're a very important rabbi. You deserve to sit in the front, in a nice chair, you know, privacy a little bit. He told her, listen, people give me donation for the Torah. I cannot take the money and pay instead of $1,000 from Israel to New York, $4,000. It's not fair. This $3,000 can go to Torah. People learn Torah. It's a lot of mitzvot. What is the big 10 hours I suffer a little bit. No big deal. She said, no, it's not true. It's the respect of the Torah. When you sit like this, people say, look at this, it's nothing important. Look how he comes. His wife constantly fight with him. Every month when he goes to America, his wife fight with him. You should go business class. So now we say, you know what? Maybe I'll find a way to make my wife happy and to make Hashem happy. It's not always possible, but in this case, he goes to El Al desk and he say to the woman over there, listen, I fly with you for years every month. Maybe because I'm a good customer, you give me an upgrade for free if you have room in business class. She checks, she says, you're right, sir, you're a very good customer. I have a chair for you. She gives him business class. He sits in business class. You know, Tamuru Kitova business class. After you taste, it's very hard to go back to economy. So he liked it very much. Next month, he comes again to El Al. He says, listen, when you have room, you always give me upgrade. You always. You know? So maybe you have room for me. Yes, sir, we have room. Here, business class. Okay. Third month, he comes, he says, give me business class. He says, we're sorry, business class is full. First class is full, business class is full. Only economy, the flight is packed. He gets very upset. Wow, I'm a good customer, what's going on here? Call the manager. Come the manager, they talk. Sir, what can you do? People pay for business class, you can't take them off. So he goes inside. So you know, when you go into the plane, you go through business class. So he goes like they say in a Megillah, Avel v'chafui rosh. It's very, very sad. He comes inside like this with his bag. All of a sudden, a rich American Jew rise right away. He saw him. Rabbi, nice to meet you. So he looks at him and says, nice to meet you. Who are you? My name is Mr. Silverstein, one of the richest guys in America. His son goes to his yeshiva in Yerushalayim. And he's a very, very big Baal Tzedakah. He gives checks to all the yeshivot. So he said to him, you're probably thinking, why I never send you a check? Every year you send me a letter that the yeshiva needs money, and I'm giving money to all the yeshivot. Why don't I give money to my son's yeshiva? That should be the first yeshiva I should give money. So the guy asked the rabbi. So the rabbi said, very nice, you read my mind. Why never you never send a check to our yeshiva? We're not good enough. You send your son to our yeshiva. So he told him, 6 years ago, when you send me the letter, I wrote to you right away a check for $10,000 and it was on my desk. Before I gave it to the girl to send it, another rabbi came into my office and saw the check. And he told me, if I would be you, I wouldn't send the check to this rabbi. So I told him why. He said, because he liked the good life. I saw him in my own eyes fly business class. You want your donation to go for business class or you want your donation to go for Torah? So when I heard that, I said, he's right. I don't want to pay for business class. I want to pay for Torah. So I ripped the check. But now, in my own eyes, I see that you're going into economy. It's a lie. So wait 1 minute. He took his checkbook, 6 years, $10,000. He wrote $60,000 check. And he gave it to him. It's a true story. It happened in Israel a few years ago. He gave him the check. He looked at it. He almost fainted. Thank you very much. Muchas gracias. Oh, he goes inside now. This is the story. Now, what do we learn from this story? Let's think for a second. If El Al would have a place in business class for him, and they would put him next to this rich guy, he doesn't know who he is. He would sit in business class and think, what a lucky guy I am. Instead of paying $4,000, I only paid $1,000, so I made $3,000. Very good. But he would never know that he lost $60,000 right there, and plus every year $10,000 for the future. could have been $200,000, $300,000 by now. So the point is, in life, sometimes you grab something and you don't know what it's going to make you lose later. And that's the problem. Let me explain to you what it is. Sometimes in schools, kids fight. you know, give me that, give me that. I don't know in Mexico how it is, but in America, in some of the public school, it's very dangerous to be a student. Very dangerous. Why? When you go into the school, they have metal detector. They check you like you go to the prison, you know, that you don't have a knife or a gun. Why? It's a mix of Jews and Goyim. And some of the Goyim over there in New York, they're very dangerous. They're from gangs. They're very dangerous. So what happened? If you bring money into the school, if you bring money or food into the school, and one of the guys there like what you have, let's say you brought, pizza, and he wants to eat now, he comes to you and say, hey, you, give me the pizza right now. There's nothing you can do. They call it in America bullying, like gangs. You have to give it to him. But the problem is, if you give it to him one time, then every day he comes to you. Give me your money. What do you have? So there are kids that are being harassed for about 5, 6, 7 years in New York almost every day. And I'm not talking about other problems. And this is what's happening. Now, between Jews, usually it doesn't happen with so much violence. It's more like a punch or a push or a bad word. But this is also something that costs big time. Why? Whatever you take from someone that it's not yours or he did not want to give you, in the end, you're going to lose it by not just that, a lot more than that. What's the proof in the Torah? The Torah says if you stole 1 million, how much you're going to lose? 2 million. You have to pay double. You stole one, you have to pay double. And that's besides the punishment for the stealing. This is just the reality of making the balance right. But you still consider a criminal in the eyes of Hashem. So we have to understand, Derech Eretz, manners, is very important in the Torah. First, you have to be a human being, and then a Talmid Chacham. Then, the Torah says, Asur lelamed Torah lemi she'en lo Derech Eretz. Someone that he has no manners, you're not allowed to teach him Torah. You first have to teach him to be a human being. After you teach him to be a decent person, you begin to teach him Torah, Gemara, in high level. Why? If he's crooked, if he has bad personality, if he has bad midot, the Torah can even make him worse because now he's smarter and he knows things and he can use it for his own advantage. Why? Because he's selfish. So what's the point? The point first to teach him how to be a good person, how to be generous, how to treat everyone nice, how not to force himself on anyone. And after that, you teach him Torah. The Torah has blessing in his heart, in his head. Let me explain what I said before. Da'at, chokhmah bina va'da'at, this is what it means. Chokhmah means intelligence. Someone tell you a story. Go straight, make a right. Go 2 blocks, make a left. Go up the hill. You see a white house. This is where my father lives. Go over there, wait for me. Everybody understand. Don't have to be a genius. You know. You understand, you go straight, you make a right, you go up the hill, you see the house. This is called chokhmah. Regular chokhmah everyone has, Jews, non-Jews, everyone has it. Then there's something that's called bina. Bina means wisdom. What's the difference between wisdom and intelligence? Bina means, the Torah teaches us, ha'yecholet lehotzi davar mitoch davar. The way to understand one thing from another thing. Like in math, 2 times x equals 6. How much is x?
3.
Did I tell you that it's 3? No. How all of you know it's 3? No. You use your head, logic. You made a small investigation in your mind and you found the answer. I'll give you another example from life. You hear on the radio that someone, lo aleinu, got killed. And the police, they found inside the house mud on the rug. Mud, sand. So what do you know right away? That it happened in a place that day it rained. It was rain. How do you know? Because there was mud. Wet sand on a rug means it was raining that day. But they didn't say it on the news. But a good detective, if he see mud, he know the person that came here, he stepped somewhere that there is sand. So then he goes downstairs and he looks, oh, now he knows the size of his shoes. So now he knows 99% of the people in town are not suspect anymore because they don't have this size of shoes. And then one thing, and another one, until they catch the murderer. For mud, now they know who the murderer is a month later. That's called Bina. The better your Bina is, the better investigator and detective you're going to be. The better your Bina is, the better Talmid Gemara you're going to be. Because in Gemara you need a lot of Bina. And what's the last thing? It's called Da'at. What's Da'at? And that's, according to the Torah, is the most important thing. Da'at means whatever you learn with your intelligence and wisdom, with the Chochmah and Bina, now you are able to translate it to actions against your Yetzer Hara, your evil inclination. I'll give an example. The Torah says a Jew, the Jewish nation, and God made an agreement in Mount Sinai. What was the agreement? That the Jews will accept on them to be like God. How a Jew can be like God? God said, I made the world in 6 days, and in a 7 day I rested. I did not create anything. It's nothing to do with hard work. You can work all Shabbat very hard, and it's not a problem. The Torah say, I created the world in 6 days, and in a 7 day I made it a spiritual day. I did not create even a little mosquito, nothing. I want you, the Jews, to be like me all over the world. Whatever you're going to live, you have to keep Shabbat. This is an eternal agreement, an eternal sign between me and the Jewish nation forever, to teach the world that I made the world in 6 days, and Shabbat, it's a holy, blessed day. So this is what the Torah say. Now, a Jew has a business. It's open on Shabbat, and there's a lot of customers coming. All the goyim come to buy. So he make $10,000 in every Shabbat. Now he comes to a lecture. He hear a lecture about Shabbat. So now he knows the Torah is from Hashem, because he watched Torah and science film. He knows 1,000,000% the Torah is from Hashem. Everything, every word, from God. It's not a joke. It's not from your father. It's not from your rabbi. It's not from the professor. It's from the creator of the world. It's a different league. So once he knows it in his intelligence, and he reads what the Torah say about a Jew that is not keeping Shabbat, so he knows that he's doing something horrible. But then he has the $10,000 that he doesn't want to lose. So it's a conflict. And that's why most of the Jews in the world don't keep Shabbat. Why? Not that they hate Shabbat. Not that they hate God. Not that they hate Torah. No. They love other things also. They love money, they like the beach, they like to drive to Macy's. They have other plans. They like to go play sport. So there is a contradiction between things that they love. This is where the Torah say you have to have da'at. Da'at means you have to have a scale in your head, like a scale. You have to put what God say, what the Torah say that it's good on one side, and what the world think is good on the other side. And you have to make sure that the side of the Torah will always be better. Because if you follow the fake life, in the end you're going to pay a huge price. You're not going to get away with that. This is what the Torah says. Everything Hashem writes, everything He records, for good and for bad. So what's happened right now? That's called da'at. The Gemara says, someone she'en bo da'at, someone who doesn't have da'at, has nothing, nothing whatsoever in his life. What do you mean? He has 10 buildings in Mexico, another 10 in Manhattan. He has a big boat. He has a beautiful wife. He has 5 nice children, doctor, lawyer, a movie star. What do you mean he doesn't have anything? 99% of the people would love to be him. But the Torah say, in the eyes of Hashem, is zero. Why? He doesn't have that. What does it mean he doesn't have that? He makes millions. He's a very smart man, yes. He has intelligence, and he has bina, wisdom. That's why he knows how to make money. Plus, Hashem wants him to make money. But when it comes to da'at, he has zero. Why? Because he doesn't fulfill his purpose in life. All his life is one big lie, one big mistake. Every second of his life, he eats what God told him not to eat. He eat even sometimes he eat kosher by mistake. Someone gave him kosher, but he never say bracha. So he steal from God because he have to say permission. Allow me to eat, and Hashem said permission is given. And then when he finish, he has to say thank you. This is manners. The policeman give you a ticket for driving fast. You say thank you, officer. Thank you for what? For rubbing your money? It's manners. You come, you pay toll. You give him $10, he give you $1 change. The country take money from you, taxes. You say thank you. Thank you for what? He's supposed to say thank you. Everything in life is manners. So the Torah teaching you to be a human being. So all these things that we are not doing, it's a sign that either we don't have da'at at all, or our da'at is very damaged. But it can be fixed. That's the good news. So now, someone that has da'at but doesn't have anything else, no house, no car, no wife, no children, no money, no nothing, one suit, that's all he has. And he sits in yeshiva and learns Gemara all day. But he has very strong da'at. And someone who owns the world but doesn't have da'at. The Torah say this one is 100%, the poor kid, and this one is zero. If you ask everyone in the world who is 100 and who is zero, almost everyone would say the rich guy is 100 and this poor kid is zero. The Torah says the opposite. This is only temporary. Soon it's going to turn around. This, what you think it's 100, will be zero for eternity. And this will be 100 for eternity. Right now it's only an illusion. Why? Because over here, it's not the place of the reward. It's the place of a test. You are only in a test. It's like being in school and you have a test. You want to be a doctor one day. One day you go to medical school and you have the final exam. You do good, you'll get your certificate and you'll be a doctor. You do bad, you have to go all the way and start from the beginning. So what does it mean? When you're in a class, it doesn't matter if the air condition works or not. It doesn't matter if the chair is comfortable or not. It doesn't matter if the teacher is nice or not. It doesn't matter if there's a lot of light or not enough light. All these things, it's not comfortable, but it's not important. What's important when you move into your office in a hospital, that over there the chair would be good, that the light would be good, that the air condition would be good, because over there it's 50 years. It's not 2 hours. Everybody in this world, Chazal say, it's like a blink of the eye. Up! And it's over. Blink of the eye. You know what a blink of the eye? Ha'olam hazeh keheref ayin. Heref come from the word leharpot. Leharpot means like to take a break, to leave alone. The eye, every 6 seconds, blink. You don't feel that your eye is going up and down, up and down. You don't feel it. Why? Because Hashem designed the eyes to be like a windshield wiper in a car. You know how he cleaned the dust? But imagine if the eyes would go down in slow motion, like this. And it opens. For 3 seconds you cannot see. You drive, right away, an accident. So it has to be very fast. So it goes fast, and it cleans the dust, and it gives the muscle an opportunity to rest. That's called clarifying. And this is how this world will be. Before you realize it will be over, whether we'll be rich or poor or healthy or not so healthy, and you're going to love what we have and we don't love, it doesn't matter so much. Why? Because before we realize it will be over. The question is, what's going to be after? I want to tell you a story that happened in Israel. In Israel... Oh, so you have to finish now? All right. I'll finish the story in 1 minute and we finish because time ran out. In Israel, the first rich guy in Israel, his name was Shaul Eisenberg. He was a very, very wealthy guy. He made a lot of money with the Chinese government and he lived in Israel in a very big mansion. There was no billionaires in Israel, only him. Today there's more than 20. But he was the first one. And he was a Holocaust survivor. He was a baby when he got saved. And he had only one cousin who got saved. That's it. Now he came to Israel. He became rich. He has a big office in Tel Aviv. And his cousin was very religious. And he is not religious at all. One day, after 20 years that they came to Israel after the Holocaust. His cousin already got married and she have many kids and they all go to yeshiva. And her husband goes to yeshiva, so they're very poor. One day her husband told her, why don't you go to your cousin Shaul Eisenberg? Maybe he can help us. He's so rich. Maybe he'll help us. You're the only family relative he has. So he went, she went, she said, well, listen, 20 years we're not in touch. I'm going to go to him now. He said, listen, we have to marry the children. We don't have any money. Go. So she came to his office. He saw her. He got shocked. Wow, where have you been? She said, Shaul, I'm sorry, we're not in touch. I came to ask for help. My husband is yeshiva. My kids are in yeshiva. We don't have money. Maybe you can help us a little bit. So he's not religious at all. He said, of course. Why you didn't come before? He said to the secretary, please write a check for my only cousin, $100,000. This was more than 30 years ago. Give her $100,000. It's like half a million today. And every month send them $10,000. Thank you, I'm so happy you're good and your kids are healthy. That's what the story is. One day Shaul Eisenberg died and presidents from all over the world came to his funeral. Prime minister, everyone. From all over the world, Jews, non-Jews. So they asked the cousin, can you say a few words eulogy for your cousin Shaul? Nobody here is family. You're the only family. Now, she's a religious woman. It's not modest to stay in front of all these people, but she owed him so much, so she agreed. So she said like this, and we'll finish with this. She said, Shaul, everyone who spoke today in your funeral spoke about all your success in this world. I want to speak about what you took with you to where you are now. They spoke what you left here. You had it for 20, 30 years, and it's gone. I want to speak about the wealth that you took with you to the life of eternity. And she told the story how she came to his office. And all the people in the funerals were crying. The Jews, the Goyim, the president, the queen. Everyone was crying. Why? Because inside the conscience of a person, religious, not religious, Jewish, not Jewish, everybody knows here it's temporary. The question is what's going to be after when we come in front of God. This is what everybody knows, but everyone wants to forget this. So when she spoke about this, even the Goyim were crying. Why? The truth is the truth. Thank you very much for being so polite and sitting here. Thank you. We'll see you in the future again. Call to.
Thank you very much.
Please take CDs, free CDs.